We're continuing chapter 17 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. They trudged down the stone steps to the dungeons for potions, all three of them lost in thought. But as they reached the bottom of the stairs, they were recalled to themselves by the voice of Draco Malfoy, who was standing just outside Snape's classroom door, waving around an official-looking piece of parchment and talking much louder than necessary, so they could hear every word. Yeah, Umbridge gave the Slytherin Quidditch team permission to continue playing straight away. Or I should do this in Draco's voice. I went to ask her first thing this morning. Well, it was pretty automatic. I mean, she's known my father really well. He's always popping in and out of the ministry. It'll be interesting to see whether Gryffindor are allowed to keep playing, won't it? Don't rise, Hermione whispered imploringly to Harry and Ron, who were both watching Malfoy. Faces set and fists clenched. It's what he wants. I mean, said Malfoy, raising his voice a little, his gray eyes glittering malevolently in Harry and Ron's direction. If it's a question of influence with the ministry, I don't think they've got much chance. From what my father says, they've been looking for an excuse to sack Arthur Weasley for years. And as for Potter, my father says it's a matter of time before the ministry has him carted off to St. Mungo's. Apparently they've got a special ward for people whose brains have been addled by magic. Malfoy made a grotesque face, his mouth sagging open and his eyes trolling. Crabbe and Goyle gave their usual grunts of laughter. Pansy Parkinson shrieked with glee. Something collided hard with Harry's shoulder, knocking him sideways. A second later, he realized Neville had just charged past him, heading straight for Malfoy. Neville, no! Harry leapt forward and seized the back of Neville's robes. Neville struggled frantically, his fists flailing, desperately trying to get at Malfoy, who looked, for a moment, extremely shocked. Help me, Harry flung at Ron, managing to get an arm around Neville's neck and dragging him backward, away from the Slytherins. Crabbe and Goyle were now flexing their arms, closing in front of Malfoy, ready for the fight. Ron hurried forward and seized Neville's arms. Together, he and Harry succeeded in dragging Neville back to the Gryffindor line. Neville's face was scarlet. The pressure Harry had exerted on his throat rendered him quite incomprehensible, but odd words sputtered from his mouth. Not funny, don't... Mungo's, show him! The dungeon door opened. Snape appeared there. His black eyes swept up the Gryffindor line to the point where Harry and Ron... were wrestling with Neville. Fighting, Potter, Weasley, Longbottom, Snape said in his cold, sneering voice. 10 points from Gryffindor. Release Longbottom, Potter, or else it will be detention. Inside, all of you. Harry let go of Neville, who stood panting and glaring at him. I had to stop you, Harry gasped, picking up his bag. Crabbe and Goyle would have torn you apart. Neville said nothing, merely snatched up his own bag and stalked off into the dungeon. What in the name of Merlin, said Ron slowly, as they followed Neville. What is that about? Harry didn't answer. He knew exactly why the subject of people who were in St. Mungo's because of magical damage to their brains was highly distressing to Neville, but he had sworn to Dumbledore that he would not tell anyone Neville's secret. Even Neville did not know that Harry knew. Harry, Ron, and Hermione took their usual seats at the back of the class and pulled out parchment, quills, and their copies of 1,000 magical herbs and fungi. Their class around them was whispering about what Neville had just done, but when Snape closed the dungeon door with an echoing bang, everyone fell silent immediately. You'll notice, said Snape in his low, sneering voice, that we have a guest with us today. He gestured toward the dim corner of the dungeon, and Harry saw that Professor Umbridge was sitting there, clipboard on her knee. He glanced sideways at Ron and Hermione, his eyebrows raised. Snape and Umbridge, the two teachers he hated most. It was hard to decide which he wanted to triumph over the other. We are continuing with our strengthening solutions today. You will find your mixtures, as you left them last lesson. If correctly made, they should have matured well for the weekend. Instructions, he waved his wand again, are on the board. Carry on. Professor Umbridge spent the first half hour of the lesson making notes in her corner. Harry was very interested in hearing her question Snape, so interested that he was becoming careless with his potion again. Salamander blood, Harry, Hermione moaned, grabbing his wrist to prevent him from adding the wrong ingredient for the third time. Not pomegranate juice. Right, said Harry vaguely, putting down the bottle and continuing to watch the corner. Umbridge had just gotten to her feet. Ha, he said softly, as she strode between two lines of desks towards Snape, who was bending over Dean Thomas's cauldron. Well, the class seems fairly advanced for their level, she said briskly to Snape's back, though I would question whether it is advisable to teach them a potion like the strengthening solution. I think the ministry would prefer it if that was removed from the syllabus. Snape straightened up slowly and turned to look at her. Now, how long have you been teaching at Hogwarts? She asked, her quill poised over her clipboard. 14 years, Snape replied. His expression was unfathomable. His eyes were on Snape. Harry added a few drops to the potion. It hissed menacingly and turned from turquoise to orange. You applied first for the Defense Against the Dark Arts posts, I believe, Professor Umbridge asked Snape. Yes, said Snape quietly. But you were unsuccessful? Snape's lip curled. Obviously. Professor Umbridge scribbled on her clipboard. And you have applied regularly for the Defense Against the Dark Arts post since you first joined the school, I believe. Yes, said Snape quietly, barely moving his lips. He looked very angry. Do you have any idea why Dumbledore has consistently refused to appoint you? Asked Umbridge. I suggest you ask him, said Snape jerkily. Oh, I shall, said Professor Umbridge with a sweet smile. I suppose this is irrelevant, Snape asked, his black eyes narrowed. Oh, yes, said Professor Umbridge. Yes, the Ministry wants a thorough understanding of teachers' backgrounds. She turned away and walked over to Pansy Parkinson and began questioning her about the lessons. Snape looked around at Harry and their eyes met for a second. Harry hastily dropped his gaze to his potion, which was now congealing foully and giving off a strong smell of burning rubber. No marks again, then, Potter, said Snape maliciously, emptying Harry's cauldron with a wave of his wand. You'll write me an essay on the correct composition of this potion, indicating how and why you went wrong, to be handed in next lesson. Do you understand? Yes, said Harry furiously. Snape had already given them homework, and he had Quidditch practice this evening. This would mean another couple sleepless nights. It didn't seem possible he had awoken that morning feeling very happy. All he felt now was a fervent desire for this day to be done as soon as possible. Maybe I'll skive off divination, he said glumly as they stood again in the courtyard after lunch, the wind whipping at the hems of the robes and brims of hats. I'll pretend to be ill and do Snape's essay instead, then I won't have to stay up half the night. You can't skive off divination, said Hermione seriously. Hark, who's talking? You walked out of divination. You hate Trelawney, said Ron indignantly. I don't hate her, said Hermione loftily. I just think she's an absolutely appalling teacher and a real old fraud. But Harry's already missed History of Magic, and I don't think he ought to miss anything else today. There is too much truth in this to ignore, so half an hour later, Harry took his seat in the hot, over-perfumed atmosphere of the divination classroom, feeling angry at everybody. Professor Trelawney was handing out copies of the Dream Oracle yet again. He surely would be much better employed doing Snape's punishment essay than sitting here trying to find meaning in a lot of made-up dreams. It seemed, however, that he was not the only person in divination who was in a temper. Professor Trelawney slammed a copy of the Oracle down on the table between Harry and Ron and swept away, her lips pursed. She threw the next copy of the Oracle at Seamus and Dean, narrowly avoiding Seamus's head, and thrust the final one into Neville's chest with such force that he slipped off his poof. "Well, carry on," said Professor Trelawney loudly, her voice high-pitched and somewhat hysterical. "You know what to do, or am I such a substandard teacher that you've never learned how to open a book?" The class stared perplexedly at her, and then at each other. Harry, however, thought he knew what was the matter. As Professor Trelawney flounced back to the high-backed teacher's chair, her magnified eyes full of angry tears. He leaned his head closer to Ron's and muttered, I think she's got the results of her inspection back. Professor, said Parvati Patil in a hushed voice. She and Lavender had always rather admired Professor Trelawney. Professor, is there anything wrong? wrong?" cried Professor Trelawney, in a voice throbbing with emotion. "Certainly not. I have been insulted, certainly. Insinuations have been made against me, unfounded accusations levels. But no, there's nothing wrong, certainly not." She took a great shuddering breath, and looked away from Parvati, angry tears spilling from under her glasses. "I say nothing," she choked, "of 16 years devoted servants. It has passed, apparently unnoticed. But I shall not be insulted, no, I shall not."
"But, Professor, who's insulting you?" said Parvati timidly.
"The establishment," said Professor Trelawney in a deep, dramatic, wavering voice. "Yes, those with eyes too clouded by the mundane to see as I see, to know as I know. Of course, we seers have always been feared, always persecuted. It is, alas, our fate."
She gulped, dabbed at her wet cheeks with the end of her shawl, and then pulled a small embroidered handkerchief from her sleeve, into which she blew her nose very hard, with a sound like peas blowing a raspberry. Ron snickered. Lavender shot him a disgusted look.
"Professor," said Parvati, "do you mean, is it something Professor Umbridge?"
"Do not speak to me about that woman," cried Professor Trelawney, leaping to her feet, her beads rattling and her spectacles flashing. "Kindly continue with your work."
And she spent the rest of the lesson striding among them, tears still leaking from behind her glasses, muttering what sounded like threats under her breath.
"May well choose to leave. The indignity of it. On probation, we shall see how she dares."
"You and Umbridge have got something in common," Harry told Hermione quietly when they met again in Defense Against the Dark Arts. "She obviously reckons Trelawney's an old fraud, too. Looks like she's put her on probation." Umbridge entered the room as he spoke, wearing her black velvet bow and an expression of great smugness.
"Good afternoon, class."
"Good afternoon, Professor Umbridge," they chanted drearily.
"Wands away, please."
But there was no answering flurry of movement this time. Nobody had bothered to take out their wands.
"Please turn to page 34 of Defense of Magical Theory and read the third chapter entitled The Case for Non-Offensive Responses to Magical Attack. There will be..."
"No need to talk," Harry, Ron, and Hermione said together under their breath.
I will stop there, I think.
"Have you already fallen asleep, my sweet kid? I love you so much. I hope you sleep well. Sweet dreams."